This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. When you visit the doctor, you probably hand over your insurance, your ID, and contact details. It's just one of the many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose it, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now. Big hour coming your way. Charlie Hurd is here. The mayor of Boca Raton, he knows how to run a city. He's going to tell us some secrets, and hopefully people in New York, Chicago, Memphis are going to take some notes. And then we'll also take your calls at 1-866-408-7669. Kind of an exciting morning. Kilmar Abrego Garcia, really assimilating well into America, gave a nice speech in Spanish. As you know, the illegal immigrant, member of MS-13, two-time domestic abuser and drug trafficker, feels as though he's ready to be an American. The problem is ICE has different feelings. We're going to get to that in a moment with Charlie. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, the city of Chicago does not need a military-occupied state. You know, these are federal troops. They do not go through the training that our police officers go through. So they cannot even enact police authority.
That is Mayor Brandon Johnson, one of the worst mayors of politicians in anybody's lifetime. Dems meet in Minneapolis amidst the gerrymandering face-off and a fight against a Trump crime crackdown in horribly run blue cities. Next stop, as you just heard, Chicago. The stakes could not be higher, but it's the working class, law-abiding urban families who will benefit.
Number two.
Me reuní con mi familia.
Brothers and sisters, my name is Kilmar Abrego Garcia, and I want you to remember this. Remember that I am free, and I was able to be reunited with my family.
Not anymore. Standoff. Dems scramble to save law-breaking illegal immigrant while the Trump team pushes relentlessly to round him up. Word is he's now in ICE custody, and he could soon be heading to Uganda. Two cases tell the whole story, and they are front and center today.
Number one.
We never target civilian sites.
Listen to this.
That we only attack the sites which are directly involved in the Ukrainian military machine.
Yes, like grammar schools. Vladimir Putin about to get punished. Russia changes stances on peace with Ukraine. And this time, I look for Trump to take action. I'll explain as Ukraine takes aim. And by the way, I know it's not Vladimir Putin, it's Sergei Lavrov. And you think, well, that's not what Putin says. No, it's exactly what Putin says. When he says, I'm not targeting, prove to us that we're targeting civilian structures. That's all they're targeting. They're getting military. They're not going for military targets. They're losing 20,000 a month when they go military to military. Charlie Hurd, fresh off Fox and Friends Weekend, filling in this week for Lawrence, joins us now. Charlie, it's a little bit disappointing. A week ago today, there was a sense that maybe Vladimir Putin would be moving in a way that we could move forward with talks. It doesn't look like they want any part of it.
Yeah, it does seem like they've stalled out. And as President Trump has said many times, when he came into this, he thought this would have been one of the easier things to figure out. And it's turning out to be one of the more difficult things to figure out. And certainly there was a lot of momentum after last week. But I can't help but think that the president isn't getting a little annoyed by Putin right now, by some of this, the gamesmanship here.
Right.
And it does make you wonder if we aren't going to start seeing more dramatic sanctions.
So if you want to talk about the borders of the land you stole from the country 42 months ago, and then you want to talk about international troops providing security, that they've broken every agreement since 1994. So we'd have international troops there. They thought they decided on a framework of that in Alaska, and they went over details with the European leaders at the White House. And now the president, Vladimir Putin, says, no, we don't want any international troops there. In terms of what Ukraine is asked to sacrifice, I think Alexander Stubb, the president of Finland, good friend of President Trump and who knows Putin well, said this, cut eight.
But I think for an American audience, it's very important to understand the issue of land here. Because if you take what Putin is asking from Ukraine and juxtapose that to the United States, it's a little bit like the U.S. giving up Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, even Maryland, and creating some kind of a superhighway through which you can attack New York.
That's the example. And that's still what Zelensky was looking to deal with.
Yeah. Well, of course, I don't think anybody no sensible person thinks that Ukraine hasn't gotten screwed here. And any negotiation isn't going to wind up getting screwed if they end up giving up land. The problem has always been the appetite among Americans, both in terms of boots on the ground, which they are hotly against, but also the funding of the effort. The concern, I think, for most voters is, why isn't this more Europe's problem? Why do we have to pay for everything? But in terms of,
The answer to that now?
Well, it's interesting,
NATO,
actually.
NATO is actually buying the weapons from us.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of interesting. Even if you look at polling within the United States, I think polls are full of it. I think you can get a poll to say absolutely anything. The one kind of poll that I do put stock in are polls that ask the same question again and again of the same groups of people over time, and you watch trends. And what I do think is very interesting is something has happened over the past 6 months where American voters are more aligned and more sympathetic with Ukraine than they were 6 months ago. And I can't explain why that is, but I think it's interesting.
I've just stumbled out to a great analogy. Should I share it with you or keep it to myself?
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear your great analogy.
So can you imagine you have an argument with your spouse and you both say you're right?
I wouldn't know what that's like.
Right. Hypothetically. So let's just think of a reality show.
Okay.
Housewife show. Right. So you're having an argument with your spouse and everyone goes, I don't know who's right or wrong. I'm not there. I don't know who's right or wrong. I'm not there. So Trump came in and said, I don't know who's right or wrong. I just want to, I want you guys to get along.
Yeah.
And then they brought the cameras in. They go, we're going to follow both of you. And it became clear, even with Zelensky and the blow up at the Oval Office, Zelensky's like, yeah, I want peace. He's like, okay, now what about you? I don't want peace. I've told you I want peace, but that you're seeing both sides. And you go, ladies and gentlemen, you make the call. You've seen both sides. If Vladimir Putin, unless he says, I don't know what Lavrov has been saying over the last week, I'm all for international troops on the doorstep. They're exposing the problem. The invader, the bad guy. There was no reason for this invasion. There was no Russian-speaking people that needed saving.
Yeah.
There was no Russian Orthodox Church that needed to absolve the Ukrainians. So this all was a folly. It was an excuse to invade a country to a guy that wants to reestablish the Soviet Union.
Yeah. But not to justify anything, but you can't say there's no reason for the invasion. There was a reason
for the invasion.
Well, to listen to Vladimir Putin say, he has security concerns.
Which is?
And that NATO is encroaching closer.
What
is
it?
Well,
NATO
not here to defend this. I'm simply saying the idea, you can't approach this by saying there is no reason.
There is
no. He does have a
reason. No, he made it up.
You don't like his reason, but he does have a reason.
But it's totally made up.
Which is my only point is if you're going to arrive at a negotiation, a solution in a negotiation, use negotiation to arrive at a solution to a problem, you have to you have to know what your opponent is thinking. You have to be, and if he says he has security concerns, you have to be aware of that. And you
There's
may disagree
things.
With it, There's... but you have to listen to that and then figure out a way to prove that he shouldn't have.
But no, see, there's what concerns. He's thinking and what he's saying. Like
okay.
he said,
okay.
NATO's a threat. NATO's never been a threat to anyone. They're a defensive organization.
Okay, so maybe his reason is
number
that he
one,
wants this
no, but,
rich
but,
area.
So he said, well, there you go.
But
so if he said, my goal is to get that rich area out of Ukraine, okay. that's his reason. He could say there's a Russian-speaking people that need saving, but that's not the reason. The reason is he wants Ukraine and thinks it's an illegitimate yeah. country.
But I just think that approaching this – and I think Donald Trump has done a very good job of this. President Trump has done a very good job of this, of acknowledging that he may not agree with Vladimir Putin on anything, but he's going to listen to the arguments because he wants to negotiate a solution to it.
Right.
That is amenable.
And if there was real things for Vladimir Putin to get, that's why the president solved the other six, and that's why he's having trouble with this one.
Yeah.
Because one side's not even being honest about what they're looking for. And what they're looking for is to absorb the country and put a puppet there. And we would never accept that. But he knows that, so he comes up with other reasons. Now, we do have this news just in. Secretary of Homeland, Kristi Noem, announced that ICE has arrested Kilmar Albergo Garcia, an MS-13 gang member, human trafficker, wife beater, child predator, and criminal illegal alien. He's arrested. He's in custody. He is being processed for removal to Uganda. Quote, today, ICE law enforcement arrested him. She went on to say, President Trump is not going to allow this illegal alien, MS-13 gangster, human trafficker, domestic abuser, child predator to terrorize American citizens any longer.
So, you know, you and I sat there and watched this this press conference with Kilmar Abrego Garcia earlier this morning. And I kept thinking, you know, can you imagine if you decided to go to France
yep.
or decided to go to Switzerland and you were going to break into the country and you were going to live there for several years illegally. And then they were going to deport you because you were there illegally. And you had also apparently committed some crimes that were pretty serious, both beating your girlfriend and then also being in a drug and human trafficking gang. And then when they decided to hold a hearing to throw you out of the country, you decided to hold a press conference. You couldn't do it in French because you don't speak French. You've been there for like 10 years, but you don't speak French. So you have to bring an interpreter who comes and translates your English speech where you're outraged. You're invoking family and God and freedom, all this kind of stuff. And then the interpreter has to translate it into French so that the French audience can listen to what it is you have to say. Could you imagine doing that? I couldn't see Brian Kilmeade doing that.
No, and I think most of the American people don't understand who this guy is and why you'd have Senator Van Hollen.
And why is this hero you know, now?
Why is he? We're going to fight for your rights. And then Wes Moore says this about Kilmeade. I can't play the whole thing. I'm going to throw up in my mouth. But this is him. Cut 15.
What we know is that, you know, and all we're asking for is that the Constitution be followed on this. The Constitution okay. is very clear about how we deal with these types of issues. And when we look at what's happened in this situation, it's the president manipulating the fact that we have a very broken immigration system.
So okay. what's he talking about?
We're in total
he
agreement.
Says nothing.
No, I totally agree with the truncated clip you just played. 100% agree with him that we need to follow the Constitution. And you know what? We are.
Yes.
This is the Constitution. Now, and the people like
him. In front of at least two judges.
Yeah. They love to say things like, oh, the immigration system is broken. Well, yeah, okay, there are problems with the immigration system. But actually, the immigration system is actually very clear about this. You're not allowed to be in the country illegally as an illegal. You're not allowed to work illegally in the country as an illegal. There are all kinds of... Now, you may not like the laws, but that doesn't mean that the system is broken. And if you want to change the laws, then you can go and elect people to change the laws. The problem with our broken, I'm doing air quotes, immigration system is that you have a lot of politicians who don't care about the Constitution and don't care about the law, and they are deciding to freelance and make it up as they go along.
Sanctuary cities is an example of that.
And violate all of the laws, all the Constitution, and because they're upset about it, because it's politically popular within the Democrat Party for them to do that. The problem for Democrats is it's becoming less and less politically popular for them to do that.
When we come back, I have a suggestion to add to the president's immigration agenda, which would really throw off his critics.
Stand by.
We have the latest. Kilmar Albrego Garcia, if you're looking to play pickup basketball with him this weekend, if you're hoping to go have a – if you invite him to your house for Monday's barbecue, he's not going. He's going to be in Uganda at Zorim Amdani's compound, perhaps, or at the Applebee's near the compound.
They could lift weights together.
That would be great. Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. Kilmar Abreu Garcia is under arrest. He was given a hero send-off as he went into an ICE facility. He thought to get his orders and go back to his family, but his family will have an option to join him in Uganda. I imagine they will say, no, thank you. That's why we have email and Zoom. I'm pretty sure. Charlie Hurd is here. Charlie, I have an idea.
Oh, good.
You ready?
I can't wait.
As much as we are cracking down illegal immigrants here, I think we should work out a plan where those people on green cards that normally have to wait 10 years can wait 5, maybe H-1B visas too. People doing it the right way, waiting in line from Argentina and Brazil and Switzerland, whatever. Those people coming into our country the right way, let's cut their paperwork. Let's cut that bureaucracy and speed up to the people doing it the right way, because right now it is too laborious to do it the right way. And now that you've sealed the border, do you agree that we can, in lieu of doing comprehensive, which is probably never going to happen, can we start doing the other stuff on the people who are following the rules?
Well, and I think that's, and you could even expand that beyond the people who are doing it by the rules and include the so-called dreamers that held up the debate over this for 15 years. And I've always thought that, you know, the real tell that Democrats don't actually want to solve this problem is that when Donald Trump went to Democrats and said, I'll make you a deal on dreamers, but you have to fix the border, they turned him down. Dick Durbin was like, nope, we don't want to do that, because they don't want to solve the problem. They love the problem. The problem helps them politically.
Until?
And this has always been, from the very beginning, if you cared, even about the people who weren't dreamers, these were young children who were brought here by their parents who were illegal. Even if you cared about beyond that, you cared about actual people that came across the border, if you care about them, the single greatest thing you could do to them is fix the border. Because as soon as you fix the border, the contours of the entire debate changes. And what we have found is that now that Donald Trump has done this, and I think that he's open to absolutely anything, any sort of negotiation on those
now,
points.
Now, here's where you're probably going to disagree with me, and I'm fine with it, is that I believe the hospitality workers, the meat packers, and the farmers don't become citizens. But if they've been here, not over the last 4 years, but they've been here and there's nothing on their record, they get extended work visas. So we don't destroy agriculture, hospitality, and meat packers, for example, immediately. I don't reward them with citizenship. You could say pay them a fine, but they don't have to evacuate.
Well, that becomes a political question. And everything Donald Trump is doing right now depends upon the economy being good for the people that voted for him and people who didn't vote for him, but the economy being really good. And I think if Donald Trump looks at this and sees that doing, you know, enforcing those laws hurts the economy, I think you're going to see him negotiating.
Because a lot of the farmers voted for him, and they're saying 70% of my workforce came here illegally.
Yeah.
And
they've been, it's a real problem.
Charlie Hurt, you're not a problem. Thank you. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks so much for listening. It was great to have Charlie Hurt in here. And of course, I have the breaking news. Kilmeade Abrego-Garcia is going to be packed up and sent to Afghanistan. That would be nice. Uganda. Good luck with that. And he can maybe bring his family if he wants. He was offered a deal where he pled guilty on two counts. One was human trafficking and then sent to Costa Rica. And he said, no, okay, this is plan B. Mayor Scott Singer joins us now, mayor of Boca Raton. And he's also a chairman of America First Policy Institute's Mayor's Council. Mayor Singer, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, first off, you've had a very interesting background. I did not know that you've had quite a bit of success on Jeopardy and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I mean, did you know you were capable of excelling on both those syndicated shows?
I always loved trivia as a kid. I watched Jeopardy from as a kid. I was fortunate enough to take Millionaire during law school. It helped pay for law school. And then my dreams came true, and I got to tape Jeopardy and win. So a lot of fun.
All right,
but
so,
I'm having a lot of fun here with you.
Absolutely. That's a good point. But you're out there, and you realize that we could be about to be here in New York City, about to elect a Marxist, communist, socialist, pick one, proud to want to redistribute wealth, and you want to redistribute New Yorkers. You're saying come one, come all to Boca Raton?
Absolutely. We've had a lot of success over decades, and especially since COVID, of attracting businesses, job creators, and high net worth individuals who want to come to our low tax, low regulation, beautiful state and beautiful city. We've got the lowest property tax rate of any full service city in Florida. But unlike the crazy ideas you're hearing in New York that are going to drive away capital, increase the marginal tax rate to 17%, that's 17% more than you pay in Boca Raton, we are streamlining efforts, welcoming businesses, and creating a great quality of life where we invest in public safety, infrastructure, and so much more.
Well, first off, what kind of response have you had from New Yorkers to date? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of people relocated during the pandemic. Is it still happening?
It is still happening, and we're really focusing on corporate executives and people looking to move businesses here. I don't expect thousands of people moving to our beautiful city of 100,000. We're pretty well built out, but we have plenty of office space to accommodate. And unlike other cities that are shrinking their downtown footprint for office, we're actually growing ours. We're working on a public-private partnership to add 300,000 square feet of office right in our downtown to go along with more than 150 that's already underway. So we've got plenty of places for jobs, and we expect people to be moving, and the response has been strong, Brian.
So he's pretty amazing too. And in terms of crime, what are you dealing with in Boca Raton?
We've got tremendous public safety records. We were at The lowest crime rates we had at 40-year lows about 6 years ago, and they've only dropped since then. And we've bucked the tide because we have one of the highest starting salaries for police departments in the nation. Because we can attract and retain the best, people understand this. And we've invested more in public safety. That's why these crazy ideas you're seeing in New York and other places to replace police sworn law enforcement officers with others are going to increase crime there. We do the opposite. We've staffed up our police department, and we have the best public safety.
So you have these mayors now pushing back on a possible National Guard presence when the crime stats are off the charts in D.C., as well as now could be Chicago. And there's a worry in places like Baltimore, worry instead of saying, I thank you for the help. So what about the mindset of leave me alone federal government? You can understand that. But I think that Donald Trump's case, he's getting impatient because they're not cracking down on these criminals.
That's why I'm proud to partner with other mayors on this newly formed America First Policy Institute Mayors Council, because we're focusing on governing the way, tying the issues you see in Washington to Main Street. And they have a governor's council as well, but the governor's council, the mayor's council, we're focused on what we can do at our cities. I'm not worried about federal troops coming to my city because we have great crime records, low crime rates, and great public safety records. So, you know, maybe it's a different perspective. And yes, cities should be able to govern wall to wall, but where cities are failing, that's where you're having problems, and this is why this discussion is happening in other places.
I don't have to tell you about the illegal immigrant driving a truck with a commercial license, an 18-wheeler, making a crazy U-turn, killed three people from Florida. They've extradited him because your lieutenant governor showed up in California to get him and brought them back, and there's a petition of 2 million plus to say he deserves leniency. But now, not only is he not getting leniency, in Florida, you guys have changed the rules, and how do you feel about it? Then now every way station will be an investigation point in Florida where we make sure that the person driving has got a license and from this country and understands English. How do you feel about this?
I think what we're really seeing, it's credit to the President Trump and the administration, because what they've done has been a sea change of what happened 4 years ago. We had millions of people without documentation coming in, crossing the border without any reason or basis, and then not meeting the basic qualifications. But that porous border created issues for us in the city level. Fentanyl, the fentanyl epidemic is far worse than even the traffic epidemic or the number of people killed every year on roadways. And the porous border allowed that to come in. With President Trump reducing border crossings by more than 90%, we've now solved the problem that was just exacerbated. And I appreciate Secretary Rubio's statement that and the administration that they're not going to be issuing CDL licenses, commercial driver's licenses, to people without documentation anymore. It's a real problem. You can't have this happening. And so it affects us at the city level because we're dealing with fentanyl on the streets. We're dealing with crimes. We're dealing with people who are injured in accidents. So I think it's very important that we do all of these things.
A couple of things are going on, too. There's gerrymandering madness is going on. They felt as though the census was not giving an accurate description of what happened in Florida and Texas in particular. Your populations increased about 5% each since the 2020 census. With congressional districts being divided up, Texas won in redistrict. They're about to change and maybe make it easier for five more Republicans to win. They've answered the same thing. It looks like they're on the path in California. And I think Governor Ron DeSantis says he's going to do the same thing. I know you don't necessarily have a say in this, but you certainly have an opinion on this. How do you feel about it?
I think it's important that it's several things. First, there were questions about the census and the after census review that came after the Biden administration came in. They reviewed it and saw that there were statistical errors. Unfortunately, for Florida, it may have denied us one more seat. That's an issue they're going to have to address going forward. Someone's going to have to address the fact that we've had a strategy by one party to increase headcount through perhaps very lax or no immigration laws for the purpose of redistricting for census. And that's something that'll have to get taken up after this cycle. But for now, I can understand why this is going on. We're going to have a bumpy 2026 cycle with states doing mid-century or mid-decade redistricting. But it's important that we get the numbers right more going forward for the census.
So with the border sealed, and you know there's so many illegal immigrants that have been here that have not broken any laws, have been here over 10 years. What do you think we should do with hospitality workers, maybe meat packers, people in the farming community? What do we do with the illegals that have not broken the law except for coming here illegally? Is there a way for them to stay with the farm if the agriculture community wants them to? If the hospitality workers, many of which voted for Trump, said they need the help? What are your thoughts about that?
I think there are the biggest challenge, which we're still addressing. I think President Trump has done a great job in terms of sealing the border, but we still had millions of people who came in over the last 4 years that haven't been addressed. So you first have to address those people. Then you have to go up to the second cycle of people who are here longer, some, you know, in cases more than 4 years, more than 10 years. And I think, you know, the reasonable policy would be looking at the differences there. But it's still, we still have a lot of people who just got here. And the qualifications for which they got protected status are going away. And I think we need to deal with that first. From a mayoral's perspective, it's something that the federal government's got to address. But I do see it's we got to get people out who don't belong here now. And I appreciate the administration's focus. As you mentioned at the start of this topic here, people are committing violent crimes.
So Mayor Scott Singer, you're mayor of Boca Raton now. You're a Harvard grad. Have you thought about the education and the exposure we're finding about Ivy League schools and the amount of international students there that seem to be a priority because they pay full freight as opposed to Americans who might have great grades? Have you thought about what the president's current war against your former university, as well as the one that's been resolved with Columbia and Brown?
Absolutely. And I appreciate what President Trump is doing there. You know, as he joked to Will Sharpe one day, he went there when Harvard was still good. I think that would hopefully apply to me, too, because Harvard's frankly gone down. It has been heartbreaking for me just to see at all of our campuses, there's a lot of them, not the state ones in Florida, mind you, how you've had unchecked anti-Semitism and just a loss of moral compass where the university president's being hauled before the House committee and couldn't even stand up to violent statements and talking about threats. You wouldn't have that in other places, and yet you're seeing it in these academic bastions of learning. It's shameful. I think the administration's done a great job in holding universities accountable, and there's more accountability that needs to happen because, frankly, there are very disturbing political and policy views that are harmful to America. And, frankly, universities are there to educate our nation, to help provide learning so we can inculcate the values that make America special to the next generation of leaders. If we're having 30-40% foreign students and these views that, you know, death to America being talked about on campus openly, that's a real problem for America. What is the point of our tax support for these institutions? So I think the administration is going to take even greater steps to remedy the Title VI violations that have gone on, and I think that's important.
So you didn't experience that when you were there?
Fortunately not. We did not have the high percentage of foreign students we have, and that doesn't necessarily mean foreign students are welcome, but it's the right views. And, you know, people shouldn't be there to be anti-American. They should be there to want to be part of a community, part of our academic community, part of an American community. And yes, universities tended liberal there, but I think what you're seeing over the last 30 years has just gone far beyond the pale of what I encountered there. And there weren't that many conservatives on campus then, but now I've heard horror stories from recent Harvard graduates and students.
And now your message to businesses. You got office space available. The climate's great. The attitude's excellent. And you say, come one, come all. While you still can. While your property values are still worth something before this mayor wins in New York City. Is that your message?
Well, it is. And also, you know, there have been crazy ideas that have been proposed by this candidate, even taking potentially, you know, private housing for public use. People should be worried. There will be a flight of capital. I think people are already moving, and I wouldn't want to wait if I were in New York till after November. I lived in New York. I love New York City. It's a shame what it may turn into. And already, have you seen the increase in crime and petty crime on the street where you had, you know, the vendors with their knockoff bags on Fifth Avenue, like I saw in the 80s, and didn't see for the last 20 years, and they're back. I moved in 2011 from New York. It was the best move possible for our family. Proud to raise our family here, but build businesses. And we are focused on this. It's not just New Yorkers who are coming here. We have people from Chicago, California. We had a spate of media happening in early July. We launched a website and a billboard in Times Square, nytoboca.com. And we've gotten thousands of hits there from multiple states about people moving businesses to Boca Raton because we are a low-tax, pro-business climate. We've had more than 20 streamlining initiatives here. We've got tech. We've got med tech, info tech, financial services. We've got a strong business base with more than 40 publicly traded corporate headquarters and 14,000 businesses. So people are coming here, and we want more.
All right, what's next for you?
I've got 7 months to continue serving as mayor. We're working, as I mentioned, on a public-private partnership that I think can be transformative to our downtown. Eager to get that finished. And I love public service. I'm term limited as mayor, but never rule out an opportunity to continue serving. I love public service.
All right. And you're obviously really good at it. Mayor Scott Singer, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Listen, I'm going to be able to squeeze in some calls. You had a lot on your mind over the weekend. You see what just happened with Kilmar heading to Uganda. You see what the president just signed an executive order restricting the burning of the American flag. Is that something that is against free speech? This is a debate we've been having forever. The president has made his decision. And also the president signing signing executive order that will stop cashless bail. He's going to have some fighting. Of course, there'll be lawsuits back. But I obviously agree that the president's 100% right. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think the core issue here is, look, crime is coming down, specifically violence, but there's a persistent problem, which is carjacking. In fact, the Doge individual in D.C. was a victim of an attempted carjacking. And that's where the federal government can work with cities and work with mayors and work with county officials to actually reduce carjackings, which are the bigger problem in cities and the persistent problem in that area.
So that is Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of Chicago, who wants to be a presidential candidate. More than likely, he's everything but declared for it. So he knows the president is lining up National Guard to go into Chicago next. It's been a persistent problem. I don't care what you say the trends are. It's horrendous. Chicago's nothing like it was. And if you thought that, you know, that's an outsider's perspective, the current mayor, Brandon Johnson, Democrat, has a current 26% approval rating. In one poll, his approval rating was 6. When hearing that the president was going to be bringing in the National Guard perhaps next, like he did in D.C., here's his reaction, cut 24.
What this president is doing, he's declared a war on poor people. I remember when we had presidents that declared war on poverty. That's the opposite from this administration. You know, picking on homeless people, you know, picking on the most vulnerable, that is not what the people of Chicago are going to stand for. And so we'll use all means necessary to us to ensure that we protect the Constitution and we protect this beloved city.
Protect the beloved city? If you were able to do that, the working class urban areas would be safe. And what the president's saying is, I'm willing to make them safe. Now, I would love to see him do it in Memphis, where he's going to get more cooperation from the governor there. And Memphis is, I think, the number one pound for pound worst in terms of criminal activity in the country. I think Baltimore's fourth or fifth, and really bad as Chicago. I mean, per capita, it's crazy. Who would ever want to live there? And it's because the horrible, make police. If they're about, 2,000 police officers short. They can't fill up an academy. So the president says, I'm going to be sending their people next. And it's going to be tough. He's also thinking about going to New York. And in New York is something that we have crime here. You have a mayor that gets along with the president of the United States currently. The next one, if it's Mamdani, won't. Here's what Mike Lawler says should happen. Cut 28.
I'd rather all of the above. The FBI, the DEA, ATF. I've met with ATF just a few weeks ago in my office on this very issue of really cracking down on gun crimes and prosecuting criminals who use guns in the commission of a crime. I was proud last year to lead the passage of the Undetectable Firearms Act, a common sense bipartisan piece of gun safety legislation enacted into law in the 1980s. We extended it 7 years to make sure that no gun is manufactured or sold with less than 3.7 ounces of metal. I led that effort. And the reason I did is because we do not want guns on the street being used in the commission of a crime. And yet, as I pointed out, you look at Washington, D.C., only 1.7% of gun crime convictions result in jail time.
And a lot of these kids are teens doing these horrific crimes, mostly carjackings. And you saw it with the Doge worker known as Big Balls, almost got beaten to an inch of his death by a 16 and 17 year old. And both are basically on house arrest. So they're like able to go to school. And a lot of these gangsters have put the teenagers out there. They can't be prosecuted. So hopefully they'll be able to change those laws. No cash bail in his executive order. We'll see if that'll hold up in court. Hopefully it'll change things in New York. It's been a problem here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot going on. I hope you had a fantastic weekend as we get a sprint to Labor Day, officially ending the summer. But there is no end to the news, and it's coming at a dizzying pace. The president signing two executive orders today, limiting flag burning in this country, as well as no cash bail. That just came in, along with moving the latest on Kilmar Obrego. This guy is, there's a lot of news on that. I'm going to get to that in a second. Michael Goodwin is standing by. At the bottom of the hour, when I talk about no cash bail, I got to talk to one of the first guys to contact me to say that it was going to be detrimental to freedom in America and cracking down on crime, and he was right. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, the city of Chicago does not need a military-occupied state. You know, these are federal troops. They do not go through the training that our police officers go through. So they cannot even enact police authority.
That is Brandon Johnson, the terrible mayor of Chicago. The Dems meet Minneapolis, admits gerrymandering, face-off in a fight against Trump criminal crackdown in horribly run blue cities. Next stop is Chicago, the mayor you just heard from. The stakes cannot be higher, but it's the working class, law-abiding urban family who will benefit.
Number two.
Y me reuní con mi familia.
Brothers and sisters, my name is Kilmar Abrego Garcia, and I want you to remember this. Remember that I am free, and I was able to be reunited with my family.
Not anymore. That is, Kilmar Abrego Garcia has been arrested by ICE. He was asked to report. He is now going to be sent, we believe, to Uganda. Goodbye. Good riddance. The other case about the illegal immigrant Indian driver with a commercial license who indiscriminately made a turn and killed three people. There's 2 million who want to see leniency for him. And then there's the rest of us. They are emblematic of being on both sides of this issue and the difference between both the parties. America, you make the call.
Number one.
We never target civilian sites. That we only attack the sites which are directly involved in the Ukrainian military machine.
So that's a blatant lie. Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, walking back almost all the progress that was made in Alaska, followed up by the meeting in the Oval Office a week ago today. Vladimir Putin had got to be punished, in my view. Russia changes stances on peace in Ukraine, and this time I look for Trump to take major action. I'll explain as Ukraine takes aim. They had major hits last night on two separate energy factories, as well as taking back portions of cities they lost last week. The Russians, with all their bluster, lose about 20,000 a month. Dead! They've lost over 1 million people, dead and wounded. And now they're at the point where they're recruiting people from Africa to work in their factories because the men have been drafted, and many of which are no longer able to contribute to society. Or too dangerous. That's another fear. Michael Goodwin joins us now, New York Post columnist. Michael, it's disappointing but not surprising that Sergei Lavrov is coming back saying we don't want international troops as a peacekeeping force in Ukraine. We don't aim for civilian targets. We want no NATO, and we also want parts of the Donbass that they can't possibly win militarily. So they're trying to do a series of poison pills, don't you think?
Good morning, Brian. I do. I think that there's no serious indication that Putin wants peace. The war for him has been a success in the sense that he has carved up parts of Ukraine that Russia has long coveted. And so for him, the deaths are inconsequential. The lasting reputational damage to Russia and to him and to the people who work for him, such as Lavrov, are inconsequential. I mean, this is a war machine. He's a heartless tyrant, and he doesn't care how many people die in this quest for more territory. So I think that it does put the ball back in President Trump's court. At some point, you cannot take no for an answer. And I think that the president has been extremely lenient in extending Putin the courtesies and the sense of trust and optimism that he actually did want peace. But there's no serious indication of that. There may be words spoken between the two of them or something that was said to Witkoff. But the reality is Putin has taken no action.
Right.
That would indicate he wants peace.
So Alexander Stubb was kind enough to join me, president of Finland, great golfer, good friend of the president, who also knows Putin, who now one of the newest members of NATO. Cut nine.
I always remind the president that the only thing that President Putin understands is power, and the only person that he listens to is Trump, and the only person that he's afraid of is Trump. So I'm sure that the president is thinking hard strategically on what to do next.
I want you to pick up on that.
It's fascinating, too, that, of course, Finland joined NATO because they saw what happened in Ukraine. Ukraine was not a member of NATO. Merely the mention of the idea was one of the factors encouraging Putin. Now, look, from a geostrategic point of view, you can understand why Putin wouldn't want NATO troops on Russia's border, which would have been the result of Ukraine. But it's been very clear for a long time that Ukraine will not become a member of NATO quickly after this war, in part because there are other issues with Ukraine's government that don't meet the test of the NATO democracies. And so I do think that this is a problem President Trump is going to have to solve if he hopes to win the peace, which he clearly wants. I think he's just been stymied by Putin's resistance and insincerity, frankly.
Right. I just think that there's nothing wrong with what the president approached it. He's giving these people an off-ramp. He's finding out what they want and seeing going back to the other one and seeing if it can be worked out and saying we got to get this done quickly and let's get a trilateral. Oh, wait, here's the foreign minister. Putin doesn't want to say it himself to walk back any type of gains that were made. I want to bring you to the actual some discrepancies on the Trump side. The Wall Street Journal had a story that said the Pentagon has quietly blocked Ukraine's long-range missile strikes on Russia. They were given attackums, but they told the attackums, which are long-range missiles from America, to not aim for targets in Russia and not to do it since last spring. Really? At least one occasion, Ukraine sought to use attackums against a target on Russia territory, but was rejected. Now, the question is, the day before, Trump came out and essentially said this in a Truth Social post. It's very hard, if not impossible, to win a war without attacking an invader's country. It's like a great team in sports that has a fantastic defense, but is not allowed to play offense. There's no chance of winning. It's like that with Ukraine and Russia. And then we find out about this Wall Street Journal story. So I'm wondering, is this a case where the Pentagon and Elbridge Colby is kind of doing his own thing?
Well, look, I can see why the president would not want Ukraine to use those weapons because it would shatter any hope of peace. It would only inspire Russia to retaliate at an even greater length. So if you're the president and you've put all your chips on peace, You're not going to go for deeper penetration into Russian territory by Ukraine with American weapons. But I do think that the missing link here, Brian, is that Putin has not paid a price on the world stage for refusing to even come to the table for a serious negotiation. I mean, I think the economic sanctions have to be quadrupled immediately if you're going to get Putin's attention, because otherwise he will continue until the last man is dead. And look at the North Koreans. Apparently they've lost a lot of soldiers trying to help Putin, and now they're concerned. So it really is a death machine that's developed in Ukraine on both sides. And Trump is right to push for peace, but I think he's got to ratchet up the pressure on Putin. Right now, Putin doesn't seem to feel any pressure.
So David Petraeus was on yesterday, and he was on, and not with us, this week with George Stephanopoulos. It never has George Stephanopoulos on. But he had some interesting things to say about what sanctions would look like. And he also said that, you know, he's supportive of the president trying to get these talks going. So here's what David Petraeus said. Cut 14.
That was exactly what the Biden administration did in the past. They were overly sensitive, endlessly, about how Russia might react to something that they provide to Ukraine. And they were restricting the use of the Army tactical missile system and others. And so I hope that that will get a review in the White House and therefore a change in the Pentagon.
And, you know, he understands world war, but he also knows that there's one country hitting deep into the other country, going for apartment buildings and kindergartens and nursery schools. We're seeing it on a daily basis. They're not even aiming for military structures. So for Lavrov to come out and say, prove it, we don't aim for civilian targets. And Petraeus saying, look, I understand war, but you got to be able to let these guys hit Russia.
Yeah. Look, you know, Brian, I think the one thing that President Trump does deserve credit for is bringing the NATO powers together. It's not just about sending weapons, but it's the security guarantee that would be part of any settlement, according to the meeting that the president had with Zelensky and the top NATO leaders, and that they would provide the troops. Now, seems to me, and the United States would provide the air cover for those troops. Now, I understand why Putin sees that as effectively a NATO force on his border, but I think that plan combined with economic sanctions and pressure on Putin is the best hope right now. I think escalating the military aspect of it, I think, is going to work against, and it's only going to delay any possible peace. So I think the president did make progress, but I think he's got to keep the pressure on Putin, the economic pressure.
Zoran Mamdani has raised more money, over $1 million in the last month. His disapproval rating is going up, but he's still leading by 20 points. Obama gave him a call and gave him an hour's worth of advice, but still no endorsement from the governor of New York, from Hakeem Jeffries of New York, from Chuck Schumer of New York. What do you think they're thinking as one of these Democrats are going to emerge, unless Curtis Sliwa can do a massive upset, as the next mayor? What are your thoughts?
Well, look, I think the problem for the three New York State Democratic leaders that you mentioned is they're worried about their own careers, their own elections. So Hochul is up for re-election next year. If she were to go with Mamdani's tax hikes on the wealthy, free rent freeze for 1 million apartments, grocery stores, city-owned grocery stores, and doing away with largely much of the police department muscle, that would be the end of her career. She would have to defend that on her own reelection campaign, and something similar for Schumer and Jeffries. They are afraid that Mamdani becomes the national face of the Democratic Party, and the midterm elections are Republican wipeouts. Because they'll have to defend Mamdani's far-left radical policies. So I think they're all thinking self-interest, And it makes perfect sense. But it also, at the same time, illustrates how far out of the mainstream Mamdani is. And I still believe there's a chance that he will not win the general election. Yes. His support has slipped. I mean, he hasn't really expanded on the primary victory. And he's going to have to reach more mainstream Democrats and even some non-affiliated voters in order to really secure the victory. Just having the left wing of the Democratic Party will not be enough if Andrew Cuomo, Eric Adams, the incumbent mayor, and Curtis Sliwa can finally get together and coalesce around one of the three. If all three stay in the race and continue to campaign, I think Mamdani, he won't need a majority. He'll only need a plurality. And he's in a good chance to get that against three viable candidates. But so the ballot can't be changed at this point. But two of those three have to say, look, don't vote for me, vote for the other one, the one of the three that has the best chance and that's in the lead. Mm-hmm. That's going to have to happen between now and the end or even the middle of October to give the alternative candidate a choice.
Wow, I can't see Eric Adams or Cuomo stepping aside. And Curtis Sliwa said that under no circumstance will I leave. So I don't know if they're going to be able to do that.
They've all said that, but they've got time to change their mind for the good of the city.
I know. I'm always thinking about that, Michael. We love to know what's good for the city because the city doesn't seem to know what's good for it. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
And the whole eyes. I mean, it's just a mayor's race in New York, but it is a national story, maybe international. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Pat Ryder from the Nassau County Police. By the way, the finest police force in the country, if you just look at results. And then, of course, if you have a chance to meet him, you'll be just as impressed. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Special thanks to everyone who came to Dallas and KLIF, who's kind enough to carry the show. And they got the word out. We had a huge crowd. And it was great to see Sybil and Clayton come out there on the stage. The local morning show does extremely well. WBAP, they got the word out, too, through the area. And thousands came out to see us. So it was fantastic. At the AT&T Performing Arts Center, unbelievable facility, just a great night to everybody, and hope you had a good time. And to Will Cain, he's now back in Texas where he grew up, and he's got his own studio show out there at 4 o'clock Eastern time, 3 o'clock their time, as well as his podcast. But he came out, did fantastic in the acting situation, as well as Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. So everybody who came out, I appreciate it. And also, WRBA, it's up to you now. You're hosting next, September 27th. I want to see all the listeners in person. We're already selling extremely well, but I hope to see the whole lineup out there. We go at least every year, so this will be the second visit. And I usually am coming this in the spring. I usually have a soccer team in the Jefferson Cup. This is going to be History, Liberty, and Laughs on Fox Nation, co-sponsored with Fox Nation. We bring history to life as we come up on America's 250th birthday. So when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Pat Ryder, Nassau County Police Commissioner, and known as the guy in charge of the safest community in America, one of the finest police forces, if not the top one in America. How does he feel about the executive order just signed by President Trump to eliminate no cash bail? And what is it going to be for Nassau County? Because you know there's going to be lawsuits because people want to make sure that criminals stay out of jail. It's crazy. Mostly they're Democrats.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You know, the city of Chicago does not need a military occupied state. That's not who we are. And
I commend the work of Mayor Bass, my colleague, and you know, all the folks in Los Angeles who stood up and fought, you know, against this, you know, authoritarianism. Here's the bottom line. They don't have police power. There's nothing they can do. You know, these are federal troops. They do not go through the training that our police officers go through. So they cannot even enact police authority.
They also know how to handle unrest, riots, if they've been through Afghanistan, Iraq. They go through that whole training, and they are there to back up, just like at the border, back up the Border Patrol, back up the cops. Should things get out of control, they'll be there. But it'll freeze up cops to go into areas that they just didn't have the numbers to do. And also, you go sometimes, some of the call times are 30 minutes. I was in New Orleans last week. They were saying that most 911 calls, it looks like crime is going down because people have given up on calling 911. It takes the earliest 30 minutes after call for anybody to show up. And a lot of times they say, we just don't have people. Can you imagine that? Calling 911 and being told we don't have people. But then it goes down as nobody lists a crime because it doesn't register. You don't write anything up. So Pat Ryder, Nassau County Police Commissioner, joins us now. Commissioner, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
When they got rid of cash bail, you came on, you contacted me, you came into studio a bunch of times, and you said, Brian, you do not understand how bad this is. When this goes, if this goes through, it is going to be terrible. Tell everyone what passed and what the ramifications were.
So in January of 2020, they came out with the cashless bail. They called it justice reform. Not only was it cashless bail, it was raise the age for the juvenile that we don't charge them. It was also discovery that everything's got to be turned over. But what it did in cashless bail, it took the decision-making away from the judge, and it said, here's the law. If it is a nonviolent felony and any misdemeanor, you're going to let them out with no bail. You're not required to keep bail. Now, bail was always, for the purpose of bail, was to make sure that people show back to court. These guys didn't come back to court, and that's why we had to go out and create more warrants that we had to go chase them down the road later on. But by them creating a revolving door, criminals that would go out, commit a crime, know that if they got caught, they're only going to get a ticket and they go back and commit another crime. Until they finally get into the justice system 45 days later, which ended up being months later because then COVID came into place. And then we also had the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter issues that were going on. So things, when they look at numbers and they say crime is starting to go down, not up, they're not telling the true story. If you look at 2020 or 2021, yeah, you're comparing it to where nobody was on the streets. There is no crime. Crime plummeted in those 2 years. In 2022, crime skyrocketed because we came out of the pandemic. We were still dealing with the fallout from George Floyd. We were still dealing then with the cashless bail system, and nobody was going. That's when crime numbers went up. Now they're starting to see it go down in 23 and 24, and that's only because you had such a high number in 2022, and that's after cashless bail.
You also have a discovery, right? Isn't there a certain window when it comes to discovery? You got to put that case together rapidly. If you don't have it, it falls apart.
What used to be you 30 days before trial, you turn everything over to defense. Now it's 14 days after arrest. You got to turn everything over. Any video that's out there, any piece of paperwork that's there, any kind of interview that was done, everything must be in the defense hands in 14 days. Unless it's a murder, then they let you go out to 21 days and there's some extensions. But you're putting the onus back on law enforcement. So we're now responsible to do all these things. And there were also mandates that were unfunded. So now government has to pay for all these people to turn all this information over.
This is what people in support of this say. They come out and they say, look, just if you're a white collar criminal and you commit a horrendous crime, you have the money to bail yourself out. If you're somebody who's on welfare and you commit a crime, you do the same crime, you can't bail yourself out. So let's get rid of cash bail. Let's make it cashless. What's wrong with that?
So I'll be the first one to make the argument for them, saying that a rich kid shouldn't get out of a poor kid. I agree that. But that's not what this is about. This is about the crime they committed. If the crime is a serious crime, you should at least have the process to hit the person with bail to make sure they come back. We have victims that we work for. They're the people who we should be defending, not the bad guy. So we're letting that, again, revolving door occur. And again, if they have the money or they don't have the money, it should be about what the crime is. And a judge should be able to make the decision that says, this is the fourth time this kid's been in here for shoplifting. You know what? You need to stay 30 days. Let's finally send a message to this guy that he's going to stay in here. And if you come back again, we'll hit you again.
What about the downgrading of charges in order to fit the criteria to be eligible for cashless bail?
Yep. So everybody has an ECAB system. That's the early case assessment. And in many of these Democratic areas where, again, like New York City, they would go into the ECAB system and then knock the charges down at ECAB, not going for the more aggressive charge. They'd go for the lesser charge. And even though we had the probable cause to make the arrest on this charge, they would lower the charge to make it fit. So there was bailing out the door.
So the President of the United States is signing today an executive order ending cashless bail. And if you do not listen to him and abide by it, Pam Bondi is going to make sure those cities and jurisdictions that do this will not receive federal funding. Of course, the response is going to be, I'm going to sue. But what does this do for you?
It gives the cops that sense of that we're being supported again, right? So we got beat up for the last 3-4 years. You know, in this county, County Executive Bruce Blakeman stands for the men and women who wear the uniform. He's a strong supporter. So we're not losing our morale from this side of it. But the law sometimes does knock guys down. He goes, why am I bothering locking this kid up? He's only going to get out anyhow. So now that is coming from that federal level that President Trump is putting down, it's showing us that we're getting support across the nation that, hey, guys, we got you. We're going to back you up. This is what we need to do to make sure the criminals stop doing the acts that they're doing. If there is no punishment, why would I stop? I'll just keep doing it.
Do you think this will help? An executive order will help, will ripple down to your level?
100%. If you know, listen, you and I know both, it will get bogged down in lawsuits and everything else before it finally gets through and comes out. But it definitely gives the judges the power back to hold somebody. Not worried about that they're going to have the fallout if they let somebody out because the law says I have to let you out.
So I got to ask you, if you do not have a problem in Nassau County, but New York City does, and so does Chicago, so does Philadelphia, so does Memphis, Tennessee, Baltimore, Maryland, even if the numbers are legitimately going down, they're still not acceptable. When the National Guard shows up, they can't act like cops. They haven't been trained like cops. So what kind of an asset is a National Guard? Should you be in an emergency type situation where you're trying to do everything possible to stamp down crime?
That perception over reality, like Bruce Blakeman is big on making sure that we are seen out there. People know we're there to make them have that comfort level when they go shopping and stuff. If you are not comfortable to walk out your door, like in Washington, D.C., and you put the National Guard out, you bring the comfort level back, you bring the perception that I'm safe. They may not have the powers of law enforcement, because they are not certified law enforcement officers in that state, but they have the power of the federal government to stop somebody like any one of us have to do from getting their butt kicked in on the corner by somebody robbing them. They'll step in and they'll stop that just like a civilian.
They're allowed. They're allowed. Like absolutely a civilian. So when they're armed, at what point can they put their hands on somebody? For example, you know, do they act like a civilian? So for example, there's two cops there and there's 10 guys are rushing two cops. If I'm in camouflage, I'm a National Guardsman, what can I do?
You got to know that they're going to indemnify you. They're going to back you up. So the president is going to back his military force up. You're going to go out there and you're going to intervene, stopping those two cops from getting hurt. And if you have to roll around with this subject and it gets nasty, well, you got to know that the government's going to back you up. They know that. This guy, Donald Trump, is going to back them up. You know, that's like our cops here in Nassau County. We know Bruce Blakeman will back you up.
But your governor won't. But your governor won't.
100%. And that's a problem. And that's why we got to know that there are people supporting us out there. And we're giving back the streets to the people, not to the bad guys. During COVID, we lost it. We lost it big time.
So the other thing is, how do you coordinate? For example, the problematic areas in Washington, D.C., everybody knows them. But people are complaining that the National Guard are in around the monuments in the areas that don't see a lot of crime. Is that because the cops can now push out to those problematic areas?
100%. So if I got my cop and I got to guard this monument, I put four cops over there. I don't have four cops that are responding to that 911 call. I don't have four cops that are walking that shopping mall to protect you from somebody stealing or somebody trying to rob you. Now it's going to help add more bodies to patrol, to answer the 911 calls and assist them, while these National Guards or military people are going to guard those structures and infrastructure that I can move my bodies to answer calls of service. They're not trained, but they know rules of engagement better than anybody, and they know the use of force better than anybody.
And so now that this executive order passed, what are you telling your men and women in uniform today in Nassau County, Long Island, which for the last few years has been the safest county in the country?
We will continue to work towards striving to be the safest county. We continue to keep our model of policing up. Knowing that the government has your back is a big boost. It's a big, hey, go out there and get them. Let me pat you on the back.
And we're gonna make sure that they're going to have bail. They got to post bail, right?
That's right. Bad guys will stay where they're supposed to stay, in jail.
Wow. And when do you find out if you're the safest county again?
So we should have found out this month. We're being told they're not doing it this year. Maybe that's because it's coming from a certain side of the media. But I will tell you this. Bruce Blakeman's Safest County America 2023. 2024, we lowered crime by 9%. So it looks like we were going to win it again. And then this year, we're down another 15%. So we continue to be the safest county in America.
So the President of the United States is really doubting that the crime numbers are going down in places like Washington and Baltimore, and he wants an investigation into it. Some of these statistics, they say, just do not make sense. Some of which, as I mentioned before, from the outsider perspective, if I don't call 911 because you guys never come, or the 911 operator says I can't get there for 40 minutes, that's not a crime that's reported. It becomes something we're dealing with alone. Do we have to factor things like this into the final stats?
Our biggest partner in our business is our communities. If we lose the faith of our community to call 911, we've lost. You can't do that. And so that's what's happening. People stop calling 911 because they know nothing's going to happen. By the time they're getting there, the bad guy's already gone. So why involve yourself, right? They need to know that they're also supported by the men and women of law enforcement. And in Nassau County, they are. And now with the resources being available to respond in Washington and areas like that, they will start to build up their support again.
All right. Do you believe the numbers? When cop to cop, commissioner to commissioner, when you see numbers, you guys pick up the phone like NFL coaches and you know what's going on, right? So how are we supposed to believe the numbers?
Our daily response is to the numbers. That's intelligence-led policing, effective and efficient use of resources driven by data. If you look at the numbers, what am I comparing them to? If I'm comparing them to last year and there's a slight decrease, well, that's good. You're doing better than you did last year. But was last year a total disaster because you failed from the year before, which was bail reform? They're not doing it. They're looking and comparing it to 2019. Well, that wasn't when cashless bail was here. Compare it to 2023 when the world blew up. We were the safest county in America. We're being compared to the entire United States. And we're getting back a response that says you're the safest county. That's a true number. But guess what? Those numbers for me were very high. They were very high, just like everybody else in the country, because it's after cashless bail. Go back before it, or go back during it, and tell me where you are.
All right. Commissioner Pat Ryder doing a great job in Nassau County, New York, as police commissioner, and just found out that the president signed an executive order ending cashless bail. Let the legal battle begin, but you guys have that until further notice. Thanks so much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Brian. Great to talk.
Absolutely. The guy's always busy, always working. 1-866-408-7669. I see we got almost every line filled, so I'll try to get as many calls as possible. Also, some of your emails from this weekend. Go to briankilmeade.com. I'll try to get to some of them, too.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and Snoop Dogg is a grandfather. I didn't know it, but he went to see this Disney movie. He's got a bunch of lesbians making out. He was all ticked off to get his grandson with him. Listen.
I took my grandson to see, what was the movie with
Buzz Lightyear.
Toy Story?
Not that one, but the
Oh, same. the new Buzz. The Lightyear. I think it's called Lightyear.
Yeah, with Keke Palmer's in that movie.
Okay, okay.
She plays like the daughter. And like, man, she had a baby with a woman. Well, my grandson in the middle of the movie like, Papa Snoop, how she have a baby with a woman? She a woman. Oh, I didn't come in for this. Came and watch the movie. Hey, man, watch the movie. They just said she and she had a baby. They both women. How did she have a baby? I mean, I'm scared to go to the movies now. Like, y'all throwing me in the middle of shit I don't have an answer for. And I was just there to go to sleep and watch the movie. That nigga woke me up. I'm in there. Huh? They just said that she and she had a baby. How? They both women. Oh, man. Here, eat this popcorn.
That's by the way, Papa Smooth. So even as a grandfather, he's got it down.
Papa Snoop, I know, it's fantastic. But he's absolutely right. Like, it's all the Disney DEI stuff that was like now out there and you don't realize it. There's another Disney movie, it's called Strange World. I'll watch it with my kids. It's really good. But the son has this crush on this other boy. And I just feel like they made a point to try to purposely write it in. Like, you could have done
Is it a Disney movie?
Yeah. You could have done it without that role. And it just brings up the questions that you just want to sit and watch a movie with your kid at like 6
o'clock. Hey, to tell you, but like Snoop's mainstream too.
Yeah.
So he's got street and he's got mainstream and he's like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
I don't need this conversation.
Yeah,
I'll pick my topics.
Exactly.
Maybe.
You have the conversation with them when they're older, not when they're, you know, 5 and 6.
Right. Okay. Let's go to the phones now. Jim, you're in New York. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Brian. Nice to talk to you. Yeah. Just talk about what you were talking about with the trucking industry. This recent accident was just the tip of the iceberg. Trucking is destroyed now with this non-domicile CDL program with these special visas. They are totally unqualified. I've seen so many bad accidents. They can't drive. They can't back in. They drive over their head. These over-the-road companies feed on them because they're cheap labor. One company sponsors Somalians to come here. I literally had to back them in at places because they couldn't back in twice. Once upstate at a Libby plant, once down in a Budweiser plant. For like a half hour, they're trying to back in, missing the dock by like 10 feet. You know, they drive arrogant. You go to a truck stop at night today, it looks like a third world refugee camp.
You're kidding. So let me ask you, are we having trouble getting truck drivers still? Is that why we're doing it?
Well, the problem with that, it's a double-edged sword. Gen Z doesn't want to do this type of work. I've been doing it for 38 years, on and off. I've had other businesses and stuff like that. But the pay doesn't commensurate with the hours on a lot of this over-the-road stuff. They pay them pennies per mile. But yeah, remember, if you're in Somalia making $400 a year living in a hut, you know what I mean? If you can go drive a truck and make $600 a week, which is dirt, and live in an air-conditioned truck, and, you know, you hit the lottery. And they're not leaving. They're destroying the rates in trucking, destroying the rates.
Wow. Jim, I would have no idea. I don't know your business, but you helped all of us and everyone listening around the country. Thanks so much. So they stopped it right now, and I think Trump's going to stop it. So the trucking industry is going to be hit hard.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. Thanks to everybody who came out in Dallas for History, Liberty, and Laughs, streaming on Fox Nation. Will Cain was fantastic. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West also joined us on stage as we bring history to life, revolving around my history books, George Washington, Secret Six, Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates, Andrew Jackson, the Miracle of New Orleans. We also have Sam Houston, the Alamo Avengers, obviously in Dallas. I played that one up big. The President, Freedom Fighter, and Teddy and Booker T. So, and also the games do count, and it's how you play the game. So I put that all together with one, and as well as outlining the biggest comeback in political history, and that is the Donald Trump story. This hour, Victor Davis Hanson's going to get that question right away. 7 months in, he's a historian. How is he doing? Also a military expert, a military historian. Where are we going with Russia? You know, there's Vladimir Putin's view of history in Russia, and then there's real history. Victor Davis Hanson knows the real history. We'll talk to him in 20 minutes. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, the city of Chicago does not need a military-occupied state. You know, these are federal troops. They do not go through the training that our police officers go through, so they cannot even enact police authority.
That is Brandon Johnson, the worst mayor in America, with 26% approval rating. Dems meet in Minneapolis amidst gerrymandering face-off and a fight against Trump's criminal crackdown. These horrible run blue cities are about to get some National Guard. Chicago, you are up next. The stakes could not be higher. And guess what? The working class in the urban environment are the ones who will benefit the most.
Number two.
Y me reuní con mi familia.
Brothers and sisters, my name is Kilmar Abrego Garcia. And I want you to remember this. Remember that I am free. And I was able to be reunited with my family.
Not anymore. Kilmar Abrego Garcia heading to Uganda. We got the details, as well as 2 million people who signed a petition to say that illegal immigrant Indian commercial truck driver who killed 3 innocent people by making a crazy U-turn, who can't read the signs, should be treated with leniency. Forget it.
Number one.
We never target civilian sites. That we only attack the sites which are directly involved in the Ukrainian military machine.
Liar. Vladimir Putin about to get punished. Russia changes his stance on peace at an international peacekeeping force in Ukraine. And this time I look for Trump to take action. I'll explain as we take aim. So we'll begin there. The President of the United States has done 2 things of importance. He's saying no more burning the flag. He signed an executive order saying 1 year in jail if you burn an American flag. A lot of people in free speech are bothered by this. I'm not. Number two, when it comes to no cash bail, executive order, banning it. You're going to sue to get no cash bail back? You have to justify that. Guess who's on the president's side in this to a degree? Governor Kathy Hochul, Eric Adams. When Eric Adams first got the job as mayor, he said, we got to fix what you just did to police reform. You only have 14 days for discovery instead of 3 months. And now you have cashless bail, so everybody's getting out. And you know what they did? Those radical lefties, even in with Democratic administration, said, no, you can't change it. Trump just changed it. And I hope this sticks. And I hope the courts hold up. So I want to talk about what's happening with Ukraine. So we found out over the weekend through Sergei Lavrov's interviews that Vladimir Putin didn't like where this conversation was heading. And I can't overestimate how much it probably ripped into Russia and alarmed Russia to see 7 heads of state and President Zelensky at the Oval Office meeting with President Trump, expressing how they were together in putting an international peacekeeping force into Ukraine to make sure they're not invaded again and working towards an end to the fighting. And he no longer had to worry about a divided NATO or a president that didn't see the need to back up Ukraine. The president gave Putin a shot. Instead, he gets this from Lavrov, things that make no sense. For example, claiming that they're not going after civilian sites. Civilian sites, you've killed tens of thousands of civilians. You're losing 20,000 soldiers. You were supposed to take Kyiv in 4 days. It's been 42 months. You still haven't. Listen to Lavrov, cut 3.
I told you already what we mentioned repeatedly, that we never target civilian sites, that we only attack the sites which are directly involved in the Ukrainian military machine, which the West is trying to beef up. And if you have any proof of what you just said about churches, kindergartens, schools, and so on and so forth, I challenge you.
Sure.
Make it public.
Please do that. I'm asking for Zelensky. I know you can hear English and you're monitoring everything Lavrov says. I think you should put together a special on this because I'd love to see all the blocks and all the people and all the families that have been targeted. And unlike Hamas, who actually sets up in hospitals and sets up in churches and mosques, these guys don't. Ukraine didn't think they were going to be fighting for their lives and be bombed for 42 straight months and be invaded 3 times. Listen more for Lavrov as he talks about the need to act, making up that Zelensky is oppressing his own people? Cut seven.
Russia started special military operation to defend the people whom Zelensky and his predecessor did not consider as humans. They called them beings, species. You should really... I understand that you need something to sell today, but if you are raising and touching upon so serious things, my suggestion is to take a look at the history of Ukrainian development.
It's insane.
After the
and by the way, they call it a coup when I think it's Yanukovych. Excuse me, because this, these names are kind of hard to remember. They kind of blend together from the American perspective anyway, or from my American mind. Yanukovych was put there by the Russians, and they just tossed him. They had an election. Poroshenko won, and then Zelensky won after that. He called it the coup, that Zelensky's not a legitimate leader because, I don't know, he had a legitimate election? Ukraine forces struck Russia energy yesterday in Leningrad and Samara oblasts on the night of the 23rd and 24th. Ukraine's Western partners are continuing to provide military aid, according to the Institute for Study of War, including through the purchases of U.S. weapons. It's flowing in. And by the way, Ukrainian forces recently took back two towns that Russia had taken 2 weeks before. So even though they're paying a price, Russia's lost 20,000 a month. Overall, 1,060,000 plus killed or wounded on the battlefield. What they did now is had an opportunity for an off-ramp and maybe establish faster than most Western leaders would have an economic roadway to transform your economy back to something that they were building within the 90s before Vladimir Putin came over and exiled himself from the West and kicked himself out of the G7. It was the G8. Here's Alexander Stubb. And he talked about what President Trump can do. Cut eight. Cut nine.
I always remind the president that the only thing that President Putin understands is power, and the only person that he listens to is Trump, and the only person that he's afraid of is Trump. So I'm sure that the president is thinking hard strategically on what to do next.
It's true. Also, if you want to know, and there was a conversation I had earlier on Fox and Friends, you know, people said, well, the president wanted to make sure that both sides were wanted for peace. And, you know, he wasn't sure what Zelensky wants peace. I go, listen, they had a blow up in the Oval Office. The guy wants peace. He was invaded. They took 18% of his country. It was the third time Ukraine's been invaded in the last 20 years. They had two security agreements, one in 94, another one in 2014. How did that go? Terribly. They violated it to the Russians and we didn't do enough. So now this time it's got to be a real time. But if you look at what basically, Zelensky and Ukraine was going to be forced to deal with, Alexander Stubb put it in American terms for me. He understands our culture. He understands our country. He understands the president. And he actually has decent relationships prior to the invasion with Putin. Cut eight.
But I think for an American audience, it's very important to understand the issue of land here. Because if you take what Putin is asking from Ukraine and juxtapose that to the United States, it's a little bit like the U.S. giving up Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, even Maryland, and creating some kind of a superhighway through which you can attack New York.
So there you go. That is so that puts in perspective what you have to sacrifice just for peace. Now, can you imagine giving up those states? And then when we want to have an international force put in there, let's say Mexico was the superior force and they just took those states, we said we need an international force to make sure you're not going to invade again. And then and Mexico says, no, we're not going to let you do that, even though I told you the week before you could. So the president's got some options. Secondary sanctions should come on Turkey, Brazil, and lastly should be China. Number two, the $300 billion located in a Belgian bank should be unfrozen, given over to Ukraine. And then ATACMS should be unleashed. Evidently, we found out last week that Admiral Mark Montgomery told us the ATACMS are not part of our arsenal in the future. We've gotten better rockets. So sell them to Ukraine and let them hit where they want to hit at this point. That will bring, perhaps, Russia to the table. Right now, they feel as though they can live their lives and lie to their people. General Jack Keane, cut 11.
The president thinks in his own mind that Putin, based on conversations he's had, and let's face it, we haven't had those conversations. He told the Euros, and we heard him say it, that he thinks Putin wants to make a deal. but the evidence doesn't support it. That's kind of where we are.
So the Pentagon, this is what does bother me a little. The Pentagon, the Wall Street Journal had a story that the Pentagon has quietly blocked Ukraine's long-range missile strikes on Russia since the spring. It's know who did it, as usual, Elbridge Colby, the Pentagon Undersecretary for Policy, developed a review mechanism to decide on Kyiv's request to fire long-range U.S.-made weapons, as well as those provided to Ukraine by European allies, and we've said no. Now, I'm wondering, is the Pentagon acting on its own? Because the president last week put this on Truth Social. It is very hard, if not impossible, to win a war without attacking an invader's country. It's like a great team in sports that has a fantastic defense is not allowed to play offense. There's no chance of winning. It's like that with Ukraine and Russia. Maybe they're on the same page, but it doesn't sound like it. When we come back, I'll take your calls. We'll talk about the new executive order banning cash bail. They'll now have to have cash bail. And now they're also say you got a year in jail, you burn the American flag. Come on, Hamas. Have that anti-American rally tomorrow. You're all going to jail. You think for a second the president's not going to follow through on that? You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Let me just describe some of the steps, and you tell me if I'm being paranoid. First, create a mass police force. Get people used to looking at that. Normalize snatching people off the street. Get them used to that. Normalize seeing the National Guard and the military on the street. Then start talking about crime in the capital, which is basically, has always been a fairly crime-ridden city. This is our nation's capital where elections are decided. And then have, because the crime is so bad, have other states start sending their troops, not just the National Guard there in D.C., but now at least six other states are sending their troops, which then Trump can then federalize. So you're having many states' troops on the ground there, and now they're under federal control. So you have in the Capitol a sort of permanent police presence. So when an election dispute might come up, just hypothetically. I mean, I don't want to be a big pessimist, and I'm going to pretend for the rest of the duration that the Democrats do have a chance of winning, and they might win the next election. I just don't think they're ever going to take power. Because this is what's going to happen. Because I think this coup is going to go off a lot smoother than the last one.
You could take a situation and skew it any way you want. This is simple. And it's simple in this way. This is where he's wrong. I think that Bill Maher figured out President Trump, but then I see something like this and he hasn't. And here's why. Don't look too deep. There's no master plan. He knew that Washington, D.C. was going to hell. He talked about when he was dealing with all the courts and didn't look like he was going to become president again. He goes, go to the Capitol. What has happened to the Capitol? See, the homeless, it got so much worse. He kind of looked back and said, what do I want to fix when I go back in office? He said, well, the crime. I should have come down harder. I should not have backed out of Seattle. When we put federal troops in there, they became a target. They became the story. When I took them out, everything got worse. That summer of love. Remember that. So one of the things, just like what he's doing now overseas, what he's doing with the peace agreements, what he's doing with the trade deals, he's getting done. So he was going to crack down on crime. But when that 19-year-old DOGE employee, working under Musk, who was mentoring him, got beat to an inch of his life, and he was in a great area of Washington, a couple of blocks from the White House, he said, this is going to stop, and I'm doing it right away. He put in the National Guard. He got immediate results. Almost. Then he gets all the volunteers from other National Guards around the country. And that's the story. Now he says, how much longer am I going to put up with Chicago, Philadelphia, Memphis, San Francisco, by the way, is getting better. I want to look into that because it looks like this mayor is doing a good job. We put his troops into Los Angeles. You saw what happened there with some of the unrest. And when you talk about chasing people off the street, for the last time, we're not snatching people off the street as a country. Illegal immigrants who have been forced to be tracked down in sanctuary cities like a wanted person, they cover their face because of the doxing and because of the illegal immigrant syndicates. They're picking them up. They don't go to the prisons because in sanctuary cities, they're not allowed in the prisons. They don't work with cops who are picking them up in a more traditional way because the cops are told not to work with them. So ICE has to act alone. So not snatching them off the streets. No one's going to nationalize and all. You can't even do that. How are you supposed to have a midterm election with the, what's the president going to go into every district and wipe out voting machines? That's really not his speed, as you know. He's into pure elections, not the mail-in, not the drive-through, not the early. He's into Election Day. So it's pretty hard to screw with Election Day. Kind of disappointing because I did think that he understood him. Bill Maher also thinks that Gavin Newsom's doing a great thing in trolling Trump. To me, it's something interesting that he's doing, that he seems to get some followers because of it. Now, amongst the Democrats, they don't have great candidates. But he evidently is leading. That's fine. Will anybody look at his record to see what he is number one in homelessness? He's got the biggest debt of all 50 states in terms of education and people leaving the state. They're among the lowest in education in terms of performance and people leaving the state. There's no state where people are leaving at a higher rate than California. But if he wants to make his name by doing Trump-like tweets and posts, that gets you followers? I don't think it gets you supporters. All right, listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, we'll put in perspective the president's first 8 months with Victor Davis Hanson and get his perspective on where we go from here with Ukraine, as well as take your calls. The president's got two new executive orders. We'll review them when we get back. He's still taking questions from the press. Don't move.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Are the Russians stringing President Trump along?
No, not at all, Kristen. I think the Russians have made significant concessions to President Trump for the first time in 3.5 years of this conflict. They've actually been willing to be flexible on some of their core demands. They've talked about what would be necessary to end the war. Of course, they haven't been completely there yet, or the war would be over, but we're engaging in this diplomatic process in good faith. We are trying to negotiate as much as we can with both the Russians and the Ukrainians to find a middle ground to stop the killing.
That was spin. The Russians have not given anything. You know, it seemed like they were going to, but they're not. And I think that's important. I mean, he's in a situation where he wants to present a certain air, a certain perspective. But the Monday perspective is a lot different from the weekend perspective. Victor Davis Hanson joins us now, senior fellow in military history at the Hoover Institute. His book is now updated. It's called The End of Everything. Victor, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thank you.
Your thoughts about J.D.?
Well, I mean, Russia has 76% of most of the provinces that they wanted, but the 25% are still huge territories, and the Ukrainians have lost a lot of people, so they're not willing to give up that territory, and they're killing or wounding 3 to 4 Russians for every one they lose. But Russia's done the terrible arithmetic and thinks that now, for the first time in over 3 years, they're making more progress, and that Ukraine will run out of manpower. And that's the real question: manpower, not your munitions. They'll run out of manpower before Russia does. So then the Allies have to come up with some kind of strategy, because it looks like at the present rate, Russia will eventually, in a year or two, and this is going to be longer than World War II if it doesn't stop, they'll grind Ukraine down. So Ukraine needs either a negotiated settlement like Finland in 1939 or 40, or it needs massive inputs of new munitions and manpower. And they've lost about 12 million people have left the country. So they're down to below 30 million people. And so that's where we are. It's a deadlock. And I think there was a better time to negotiate in 2024 when Russia was still stalled and was losing a lot more than they are now. But now Putin thinks that he's got the momentum. I don't know whether he does or not, but that's what his operating principle is. So to your question, are we being played? I don't know if played's the right word, but he's not eager to make a settlement because he thinks time for a while at least is on his side.
So, and the other perspective is, you know, he's running out of guys. You know, he barred North Korea guys. He's using North Koreans now in factories. He's going through Africa trying to get workers. If these reports are true, I don't have a person in Russia, but most of this stuff is unrefuted. And he's running out of people because he doesn't draft a certain type of people.
He doesn't. That's a good point. But the problem, again, is that Ukraine's now down to 30 million and Russia can draw on a pool of 145 million. So even though he's down, that it's not an absolute, it's a relative problem. And he's not fighting China or he's not fighting India, he's fighting Ukraine. And that's the problem. And it's not really reality, Brian, it's his perception. I think part of the problem is he thinks that this was a disastrous, stupid move, which it was. And he already had Crimea, he already had the Donbas border lines. They weren't going to go into NATO. There was no reason to invade, except he thought he could get away with it under Biden, as he had, you know, in Georgia and Ossetia and under Obama in 2014. And now he has to explain to the oligarchic class and the military apparatus that what he did was worth it and that he's got enough territory to justify, which some people think is 1.5 million dead, wounded, missing, or captives. And he apparently thinks he doesn't have enough territory to go back to. I know he's a dictator, but all dictators report to something, and that's usually the oligarchic or military hierarchy. And I think he thinks that I have to get this 76% of what I invaded. I've got to get the whole thing. And, of course, Ukraine is not going to give him that. And that's where we are in this deadlock.
But they also don't want international forces on the ground. But when they left Friday in Alaska, they thought that they were open to a international security force. And then Lavrov made it clear in a series of interviews, including one with NBC yesterday, that they're not into that. They said if Russia would have to be part of any peacekeeping force. Obviously, that's laughable.
That's not going to happen. I think they're worried most of all not about the Europeans on the ground. I doubt except for a few Eastern European countries and the new members, I doubt the Europeans are going to be very deterrent on the ground. But the point that they're worried about is coming along with that promise is U.S. air support. And we saw what happened in the Balkans. U.S. air support was definitive. And one thing the United States is preeminent, it's not going into places like Fallujah and fighting door to door. But if you're in an air campaign, it's the best air force in history. So that's what they don't want. They do not want a small European deterrent force backed up by U.S. air power. And that's the other thing very quickly is that they're betting that Trump won't use a secondary boycott because to do so won't just affect, you know, Iran or North Korea, but India, which is now sort of distancing itself from us, and China. And Trump has been very careful not to mention China and India as a package, because you're talking about 3 billion people and you put a secondary boycott on them and right before the midterms it could harm the U.S. economy. So, but yet he knows that's the only thing that will really hurt Putin, and yet it would hurt our economy as well. So
right.
That's the kind of the dilemma that he's in.
You got Turkey and Brazil. That would be a nice way to ramp it up. So that would be three. And already feeling the price, paying the price over in India. So let's talk. David Petraeus was on yesterday. Did you see the Wall Street Journal story that said that it seems as though we're told in the spring, we told Ukraine, do not use the ATACMS to strike Russia in Russia. They quietly block Ukraine's long-range missile strikes. And then Trump, the next day, the day prior, said this on Truth Social: it is very hard, if not impossible, to win a war without attacking an invader's country. It's like a great team in sports that has fantastic defense, but is not allowed to play offense. Well, then the Wall Street Journal story comes out revealing this. Is this a situation where the Pentagon is doing something different than the president wants?
I don't know, but I think there's a feeling in the White House and the Pentagon that, according to the old Cold War rules, it's very dangerous in a proxy war to hit the homeland that's justified of your adversary. When Cuba was a proxy for the Soviet Union and us, and Khrushchev decided to use that proxy to aim missiles at our homeland, we almost went to DEFCON 1 to stop it, and we removed missiles from Turkey as part of the compromise. So in the Cold War, we could have really won the Vietnam War had we had unlimited bombing from the very beginning and hit all of the apparatus in Hanoi, and we couldn't do it. We couldn't bomb Haiphong because we were afraid that we would trigger a Soviet or a Chinese invasion. And we had the same problem in Korea. So I think that institutional thinking in the Pentagon, and even among the, especially among the MAGA people, is it's militarily justified, and it's the only way to win the war is to make Russia pay, but you're using a proxy to hurt your global rival, and there is a long history that gets into some dangerous territory. And I think that's the hesitation. I don't know whether it's justified or not. I know in military terms, if you want to win the war, you're going to have to hit supply and logistical capability inside Russia. Mm-hmm. And I also know, according to the Cold War protocols, when you do that in a proxy war, it gets kind of sticky.
But here's what General David Petraeus said. So that was couched to him about the Wall Street Journal report and the president's post. Cut 14.
That was exactly what the Biden administration did in the past. They were overly sensitive, endlessly, about how Russia might react to something that they provide to Ukraine. And they were restricting the use of the Army tactical missile system and others. And so I hope that that will get a review in the White House and therefore a change in the Pentagon.
I mean, think about it. Joe Biden gave them enough to not lose, but to make sure they didn't win. Remember,
yes,
no HIMARS, exactly. Got HIMARS. No Patriots, you got Patriots. No F-16s, got an F-16s. No M1A1 tanks, got M1A1 tanks. And then attack them with the last thing. Imagine if he just had a coherent policy to begin with.
Yeah, but the thing is, in any other war, this giving enough to win, but give enough to sustain the effort but not to win would be suicidal. But we have never done this before. We've never had a proxy war on the doorstep of Russia before. We've had it in Vietnam, we've had it in Korea, and if you go back and look at those wars, they could have been won very easily. MacArthur wanted to bomb all of the Chinese depots across the Manchurian border. He wanted to shoot down every Russian pilot. In Vietnam, we knew the Russians were unloading stuff at Haiphong that we could have destroyed, but we didn't do it. And I don't know, when General Petraeus says that, whether he's thinking that that was a mistake in the past or that that was communism and now Russia is a different bird than the Soviet system. But I'm not critiquing it, Brian. I'm just saying that it's deeply ingrained in American foreign policy over 80 years in the post-war order, that when you're in a proxy war with a nuclear power that's your global rival, and they keep threatening to retaliate, and 99% of their threats are empty, you don't know in that type of threat what the 1% is. I think they're not going to do anything. I think if you hit certain targets and you avoided their strategic bases or you didn't go after their nuclear facilities, they wouldn't do anything. But I'm not sure of that. And the problem is they have 6,000 deliverable nuclear weapons. And the other problem is the borders of Ukraine, the way they look at it, are so fluid. I mean, until 1939, all of Western Ukraine was Roman Catholic, Polish speaking. And only the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact ethnically cleansed the Poles. And then Stalin never gave it up. He broke his promises and he gave Poland territory in East Prussia and Pomerania for the new Poland. And then Khrushchev then said, well, we're going to give Ukraine autonomy in the 50s because they have a nationalist movement, and he changed the border. So Crimea was an independent country in 1991, 92, and 93, and Russia was going to steal it, and Ukraine got it first. So I'm not at all defending the Russians. I'm just saying that when we look at this, the borders are they're like the Balkans. It's got the same problems of going in and getting rid of Milosevic, and we had problems there. Russia at one point, remember,
we were told that we stopped our NATO commander from storming an airfield, and we said, "You want to start World War III?" And that's what we stopped them. But it was a very tricky operation.
Right. Victor, I guess the thing that I factor in is I don't think for a second the Russians are done here. So no matter how, if Ukraine stops right now and they get the Donbass region, in 5 years, we're going to be hearing about unrest in Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, problems with elections. A Russian candidate is successful. The Russians were called in by Russian-speaking people to take part of one of those Baltic nations, and they're going to begin to take in the rest of Georgia. Their goal is to gradually get the water so hot it boils, and NATO's going to say, wow, how the hell did they reconstruct the Soviet Union? And we're going to be mad at this generation for allowing it to happen. Am I wrong to play this out that way?
You're wrong if nothing changes. But if NATO goes up to 5%, and they've now got the best artillery per capita in the world with the Finns, and the Swedish avionics industry is as good as ours, smaller, but we're NATO, if they go up to 5% and you've got the best army in Europe, the Ukrainians, they are the best army and the largest now except for Turkey, then you do have a deterrent. You can have a DMZ sort of like we've seen with North Korea, and it'll be just as tense. And if you guarantee U.S. air power will protect the integrity of Ukraine, I think you can deter Putin. There was a very interesting comment very quickly at that mini summit last Monday when the Finnish President Alexander Stubb said, you know, we can solve this problem. We did it in Finland. And what he was talking about was 1939 and 40. The same thing happened. Stalin, in league with Hitler, said, we want all of Finland. And they said no. And then they said, well, we'll take what we can get. And there was a war. They lost 500,000 people. And Mannerheim and the Finns stopped them. And then they negotiated. And they gave them 10% of the territory. And Stalin said to himself, I'll never want to go into Finland again. It was such a bloodbath for and Finland was sort of like Austria or Switzerland for the next 80 years. And I think that's what the Finnish president was saying, that if Ukraine makes it so bad for Russia to come in, but it gives territorial concessions, maybe what we have now, a DMZ right where the battle, a ceasefire line, and then we give them air support, I don't think Putin will want to do this again. I think that's the thinking in Washington.
And here's what Alexander Stubb told me on Sunday night. Cut 9.
I always remind the president that the only thing that President Putin understands is power, and the only person that he listens to is Trump, and the only person that he's afraid of is Trump. So I'm sure that the president is thinking hard strategically on what to do next.
You think he's right?
Yeah, I do. I think he's right. And I think the reason that he said that is that, to be frank, you and I, Brian, don't know what Trump's going to do. He's a mercurial person. And if he gets fed up with Putin, which he may be doing, and Putin thinks there was a reason, they had it all wrong. He came over here, and his whole point was to placate Donald Trump. And all that gibberish about all of the ancient history and all that, it was basically saying, please do not have a secondary boycott. Please do not give weapons. And we will give grudgingly marginal concessions over a year or two of negotiations while we try to gain traction on the battlefield. That's what he was doing. And Trump, you know, he said, I go home to Melania and I say, I got a deal. And she says, no, you don't. They've killed somebody today. So the reason this war has gone on is there was no deterrence.
I hear you. The End of Everything has been updated. It's an excellent book. Victor Davis Hanson, always fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
This is just a stunning analysis that the New York Times has out in the last couple of days. You've seen nationwide a drop in Democratic registration numbers. And in the battleground states, it's just as stark. Look at this. The share of registered Democrats down almost 4 points in Arizona just since 2020. Nevada, more than 8 points. North Carolina, Pennsylvania. All of these big battlegrounds have lost Democrats in large numbers, again, just this decade. So that just tells you how tough it's going to be for Democrats to fight their way back when it comes to control of Congress or potentially the presidency down the road. It's hard to create a wave if voters are fleeing your party.
And they're in Minneapolis right now with the Democrats, and that is ABC News breaking down the situation in America. Nobody wants to be a Democrat. Even Democrats, the ones with the most heat, are way left. Socialists, the guy who's getting the biggest crowds is Bernie Sanders. He's a washed-up 84-year-old without any accomplishments, but he's a socialist who says America is rigged, right? It's only for the it's not for the little guy. It's only for the rich, and that's why he's doing his anti-oligarchy tour. So those numbers don't lie. That's why they're having the emergency meeting. I don't know what's going to come out of it. They're only working on a way to condemn Israel. I heard they're coming up with two pieces of legislation. Doesn't make any sense. Meanwhile, the Republicans got to try to buck tradition, hold on the House and Senate. And that's what Trump is very set on doing. He's still in the Oval Office. Now taking questions for 45 minutes. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.